Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
All right. Welcome, ladies and gents, to the Absolute Return Podcast, episode 98. I'm Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kesslering.
Today is Sunday evening, November 15th, recording the podcast a little bit late this week. Had a lot going on Friday and Saturday, so finally getting to it. Having a good day, and the reason I'm having a good day is because news just broke that Taubman and Simon announced that they rehashed their deal, cut the price to $43 a share, which I called, if you check out my Twitter last week, and it's a good feeling. So I had some steak and cheesecake for dinner to celebrate. But nonetheless, let's get on to the podcast this week. And I wanted to start off things with this crazy move we had in the market, specifically on Monday. We had the vaccine news that caused what I'm referring to a quant shock and a record-setting short squeeze, like the likes of which I've never seen before. It was just massive. So we're wondering, is this short covering in low-quality junk stocks overdone? And so what happened specifically on Monday, Pfizer announced positive results for its COVID vaccine, which is obviously tremendously good for humankind, mankind. But that being said, it was awful if you're a short seller or a long short quantitative investor from an investment standpoint, specifically stocks that had been performing well. So we're talking about the momentum factor here. Stocks that had been performing well plummeted on the news. And then to make things even worse, beaten down low quality junk stocks absolutely skyrocketed. In fact, the long short momentum factor suffered a 15 standard deviation event, which is, I don't know how rare 15 standard deviation events are, but they're probably like a number of iterations of the universe or something along those lines. But the momentum factor lost 23% on Monday, its worst on record. So an absolutely shocking move for long short systematic investors focused on the momentum factor. Now, this crash in the momentum factor was so rare that writing out the chances of the occurrence on any given day required a 16-digit number followed by 63 zeros. Now, of course, this assumes a normal distribution. Now, this momentum factor drawdown has further challenged evidence-based long-short investing this year. And an interesting quote I saw in the news, a guy claimed, "These aren't your father's equity markets," and boy, is he right about this. Short-only funds ended the day down double digits. Mike, just an absolute bloodletting for anyone involved in shorting of junk stocks. What are your thoughts on this enormous move to the negative in the momentum factor?
Yeah, bloodletting is an accurate way of describing this, and it just incredibly rare event. And I mean, we were talking about this at our office, and our CTO and head of research, Derek, really described it as a reckoning for Nazem Taleb. As you had mentioned, Julian, any of the probabilities that are assigned to an event such as this are really using a normal distribution. And for those of you that haven't read any of Taleb's work, is he really focuses on the fact that stock markets really show to have fat tails as opposed to a normal distribution. So all right. That means is that crashes such as this, or any sort of crash, not this in particular, but any sort of crash will happen more commonly than would be expected if you just look at a normal distribution curve. And really what was interesting, and you alluded to this, was as well as, yeah, short funds also got crushed, but it was really the long end as well. It was just a complete reversal for long short funds, which is quite frustrating, but those things do happen. Those types of events do happen. It's just frustrating when they do. And really this has been a very interesting year compared to the last 10 years in factor investing, where 2020, it's been quite volatile for all factors. You look at value and quality factors have been fairly volatile year to date, like if you compare relative to years prior. So it's kind of a turn where we're seeing a lot more volatility, and momentum has been a factor that's done very well over the last number of years. And so a little bit of a reversal, but you know, as any investor doesn't like to see those types of moves in a single day, right?
Yeah, certainly a black swan event. And I should add on my comment, Taubman and Simon renegotiating, restriking their deal at $43 per share, which is a massive win because it was trading in the mid-30s last week. So congratulations to all arbitragers. And we are long in the Accelerate Arbitrage Fund, so I imagine compliance tapping me on the shoulder here. Got to mention that. And the reason that it feels so good, because when you make a investment call that is non-consensus and say that the market is wrong, and then you're proven right, there's no other feeling in the world. And that's why we truly love this investment business. But let's get on to the next piece of news, which is leveraged buyouts coming to Canada as U.S. private equity firm Apollo struck a friendly leveraged buyout of Great Canadian Gaming for $3.3 billion or $39 per share. Now, this LBO is priced at a 34.9% premium, so higher than average, but it in fact faces an uphill battle as numerous shareholders have come out immediately against the deal, complaining that the casino operator is being sold too cheaply to a foreign player. Now, this buyout is controversial because prior to the pandemic, Great Canadian Gaming announced a share repurchase program at a price of up to $46 per share, which is 18% above the buyout before canceling the buyback in March as lockdowns began. Now, Great Canadian Gaming, it's a casino company with casinos throughout Canada. It has been hit very hard by the pandemic. Its entertainment and hospitality facilities are located in BC, Ontario, New Brunswick, and Nova Scotia. They're all forced to close throughout the COVID pandemic. And in addition, Great Canadian did not seek other bids prior to Apollo and this deal coming to a definitive agreement. Apollo's approach was disclosed as unsolicited, so they did not shop this deal at all, which somewhat frustrates shareholders. Nonetheless, Great Canadian Gaming stock finished the week up 44.5% to close at 37 and change, roughly 3.3% discount to the buyout price. And this is a really interesting dynamic because we have had a number of large shareholders come out against the deal, and it looks to be heading to somewhat of a standoff on deal terms unless the bid is improved or an interloper submits a superior proposal. Talking about some of the shareholders that have come out publicly against the deal, Bloomberg Sen Investment Partners, unrelated to Bloomberg LP, they own about 14% of Great Canadian's shares. They told on an investor call that the Apollo deal doesn't come close to the true value, long-term value of the stock. And then in addition, other shareholders such as Madison Avenue Partners and Breach Inlet Capital said they would also vote against the deal. So you have it such that I believe they don't have the votes to get this transaction over the line. And if your shareholder here are buying at 37 and change, and the downside is pretty significant, call it $9 or $10, upside here to 39 is pretty slim. And with the $39 per share deal likely not to go through, so buying here, say they can get a bump, i.e. Apollo, to improve the terms, or an interloper to come in, say they come in 10% higher, what the share price is implying where it's at, 37 and change, given the downside, that the market is pricing roughly a two-thirds chance of that happening, which are odds that I don't necessarily like. I got a comment here from the Canaccord Genuity analyst. He stated, "This is a positive outcome given the near-term challenges for both investors and the company alike. Great Canadian is likely to remain challenged over the near to medium term due to the impact of COVID-19, which has resulted in facility closures and guest restrictions across the company's portfolio." And certainly, Mike, this makes sense in the context of increasingly strict lockdowns during the second wave of COVID that's really coming through the country. What are your thoughts on this seemingly Mexican standoff that's coming to one of the largest LBOs in Canada in a while?
Yeah, it's certainly very interesting. And there's a few areas to unpack here. Julian, you mentioned Bloomberg Sen, Breach Inlet Capital, and Madison Partners. Now, they all mentioned that was on the earnings call Tuesday, that they all of them quoted on the call that they would not be voting for the deal.
They were angry. And then
very angry. And I'll get into that in a moment. But as well, Bloomberg News also reported that there's a number of funds at CI Financial that also own shares, and they're actually through CI are actually the largest shareholders. But there's a few different PMs. It has been reported that a few of them at least will be voting against the deal. So if you take the whole CI stake, you currently have 35% voting against the deal, just at those quoted numbers. And so that would be enough to put an end to the deal, just because you do need a 66 2/3 majority vote. But yeah, as you had mentioned, Julian, this was one of the most uncomfortable earnings transcripts I've ever read through. Unfortunately, I was not on the call, but you start out with a very hostile call. CEO was apologizing to some of the shareholders for, you know, basically hurt feelings, how they were feeling, as well as made kind of a comment around, you know, that if they're not confident in the deal, that he's not doing his job. And there was an all-time quote from, I believe it was from the Bloomberg Sen PM, where his comment was, "If you want to do another job, I'm sure we can find someone else to ruin the company," which is fairly hostile.
That's aggressive.
On a transcript. As well, even the sell side analyst from RBC was pushing management fairly hard, asking some pointed questions.
Well, but the end of the day, this is a 35% premium, which is significantly higher than the average control premium that we do see in the market, right?
But so you got to take that into account. Close to a 3-year low. And I don't have a very strong opinion on this, but I do want to outline some of the complaints that shareholders have here. So as you mentioned, Julian, no formal sales process after the unsolicited bid from Apollo. That's the main one that they were, the main sticking point, as well as selling a monopoly at what these investors believe is a monopoly asset that close to a 3-year low. And the investors were pointing out that the company produced $4 per share of free cash flow in 2009. Now, I don't know if that's really fair to be bringing up the 2009 numbers, or 2019 numbers, not 2009, 2019, because that's before the COVID impact, and it would imply a 7.5 times free cash flow number, where the other thing that I saw quoted was that Great Canadian is trading at a substantial discount to its U.S. peers. And specifically, there I saw Wynn Resorts being mentioned. And, you know, like, I don't know if that's a fair comp. Wynn Resorts is 4 times the size. They do have a little bit more leverage as well. But I mean, it's just not an easy comp. And yeah, it trades at kind of double the valuation multiple. But yeah, not a very good comp.
And it has the brand as well.
Exactly. And then the third kind of complaint was that the offer was below previous share buybacks of the company. In 2018 and 2019, the company spent $350 million buying back the stock above $45 per share. And then was even this year planning on buying back another $500 million at a range of $39 to $45 this year too. And the fourth and final one was really that after there was negative guidance issued from management on the last earnings call,
right,
which some of these investors believe contributed to the stock tanking prior to negotiations. And, you know, as you'd mentioned, Julian, Apollo is defending their $39 offer, large premium, as well as they did quote that it was above analyst price targets, which, I mean, we take that with a grain of salt. But really, yeah, it seems like interesting timing by management. I don't think the company was cash flow negative at this point. I think they still were slightly cash flow positive, but it seems like an inopportune time. But I mean, if it truly is, I guess that's what I would mention. If it if it is really that much of a low ball offer, somebody else will come in and overbid. So I think that'll be a good indication of if there actually is a lot more value to be had here, or if perhaps the investors were just looking at things a little too optimistically, because obviously management doesn't see it in the same light. And on the earnings call, there was discussion of future investment opportunities within the business, and management wasn't very positive on those.
Right. And shareholders need to be careful. I remember looking at a deal last year, specifically Canfor Corporation, which got a go private offer, which was at a substantial premium, almost 100%. At around, I believe, $16 per share. Shareholders, in fact, voted it down, and the stock went from nearly $16 to about $6 in March. Now it's around $17, but that certainly wasn't worth the volatility. So shareholders should definitely be careful with respect to these types of situations. No superior proposal or alternative bidder on the table. And where the stock's trading right now, 37 and change, it is pricing in a quite high probability, roughly 2/3 of either Apollo bumping or an interloper coming in over the top. So, you know, it's not the most attractive odds to be betting in that type of scenario. And the other thing to consider is that Great Canadian Gaming, they're obviously in a recessionary environment. Some of their facilities are challenged just due to COVID, which is rapidly surging throughout Canada, and could force even harsher shutdown measures. So certainly not a great time for the business. And the other thing is that they're all caught up in this money laundering scandal happening in BC, and as many listeners would know, is that British Columbia in Canada is one of the foremost money laundering jurisdictions in the world, and where people are laundering money is either through Vancouver real estate or BC casinos, of which Great Canadian Gaming is right in the thick of it. And that's, you know, not necessarily proven. However, there is some court litigation, I believe, going on.
It's definitely a tail risk.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just saying that such that investors keep that in mind, because when you're in these sort of merger arbitrage situations, risk arbitrage, you got to keep in mind any specific risks that could emerge over the deal cycle. And in this one, I see a lot, not saying that we can't see a bump or an overbid, but what you need to keep in mind is, are these attractive odds that the market is offering us? And it's not necessarily like this Tubman Simon situation, which last week the stock was in the mid-30s, and I believe there's a extremely high probability that they'd settle before the court date was set to start on Monday. The trial was set to start. And what we've been seeing recently is that no one wanted to fight over a material adverse change clause, and all these firms were settling. So I thought settlement was high probability. And if it were to happen, it would happen in the low 40s. So I think that was a great risk reward situation, and Great Canadian.
And a higher floor as well with Tobin, right? Like, as you mentioned, Juliet, like Great Canadian, you're 100%, you need somebody to come overbid, right? Like, right. It's not just going to magically re-rate to a 18 times EBITDA multiple. And so, yeah, you're really focused on, there's one lever that can be pulled to realize value. And that's a little bit frustrating. And so, like, for folks that want to follow along, I believe the vote's planned for December 23rd, right before the holiday season. So the information circular should be filed shortly for those wanting to understand what actual process was run in terms of when Apollo contacted them. So that will be interesting to follow too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Will Great Canadian Gaming shareholders receive a present in their stocking, or will it turn out to be coal? Roll some craps. But I digress. Let's move on to a really interesting M&A situation, in which VF Corp, the parent company of Vans and Timberland, they announced the acquisition of streetwear brand Supreme for a shocking $2.1 billion. Now, many people will know Supreme. They're a New York-based skate shop, streetwear brand with a cult following. They have 12 stores founded by James Jebiah, and they're actually partially owned by Carlyle Group and Good Partners. Supreme was founded in 1994 as just a single skateboard shop. They branched out and they do a lot of exclusives, and they are able to get that pricing power for the clothing that they do offer. It's managed to appeal to both mid-market and luxury shoppers by creating this sense of scarcity of which most brands cannot do. So that's perhaps why Supreme, which is like a 12-store skate shop, is being sold for $2.1 billion, which is absolutely just pretty crazy when you think about it. But there is some strategic rationale that makes the deal make sense. VF sought out an acquisition of Supreme because of the brand's strong exposure to the segments where they see the market shifting to, according to their CEO, VF CEO Steve Rendell. Specifically, consumers are gravitating towards brands associated with active outdoors and most importantly, streetwear. And perhaps VF is seeing somewhat a gap in their product coverage when it comes to streetwear. And they indicated that Supreme is just a great fine point on that move, and it's very complementary to other brands within their portfolio. At its core, Supreme is an East Coast skate brand, and its core products sell on average. I mean, they're not super expensive, $40 on average. But what's surprising is that they do receive 60% of their revenue from online. So certainly nailing the omni-channel in addition to their 12 stores. And brief history on how private equity firms got involved. In 2017, Supreme sold a 50% stake in the business to Carlyle for $500 million, so a $1 billion valuation. Now, just 3 years later, they're exiting at a $2.1 billion valuation. So a great IRR for Carlyle there, some nice foresight. Who knew that those PE guys could be so down with a skate shop brand and know what's hot. But nonetheless, Supreme does have revenue of more than $500 million. So they are firing on all cylinders, just crushing it in the market. And Mike, what I thought was most interesting on this deal is on news of the deal announcement, VF shares rallied 13.6% this week. And they added $3.7 billion to their market cap. Now, this $3.7 billion increase, specifically off this deal, perhaps the market moves in there as well. But you got to admit that this Supreme deal did affect the share price to the upside. And if that $3.7 billion increase in market cap was attributable to this Supreme deal, then the deal more than pays for itself, right?
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to follow how the brand it kind of evolves, because as you had mentioned, Julian, it's traditionally been, they started out with kind of that mid-market, and it's one of the rare brands that has been able to capture both the mid-market and especially in recent years, kind of the upper end of the market as well. When, as you had mentioned, with the limited sneaker, like drops of apparel and sneakers and whatnot, that's been pretty important for them, that real exclusivity at the upper end of their brand, where you can see everything from, as you mentioned, the $40 average cost for their apparel. But they also have some pieces that are, you know, in the hundreds of dollars, you know, nearing $1,000. So they kind of have both ends. Historically, brands that try to do that sort of strategy, it doesn't really work out that well, because typically the upper end of the brand will just get diluted by the lower end. So it'll be interesting, this sort of distribution strategy they expect to roll out. Already, Supreme and Timberland, one of VF Corp's portfolio companies or portfolio brands, they already announced a collaboration. And if you look at kind of VF, where their specialty lies, it really lies in the mid market. And so it'll be interesting if they're able to execute as well on the upper end, because I know Supreme, they've done certain collaborations with companies such as Louis Vuitton and other kind of very high-end luxury brands. So it'll be interesting to see if VF can pull that off. And I mean, as well, when the type of numbers that you're talking about, Julian, in the hundreds of millions of dollars in sales, and that real the core of their base has traditionally been that skateboarder brand, you know, does it just become less cool now, right? If you get, I don't own any Supreme wear. I don't know if you do, Julian.
Well, I am a big Vans guy, and I don't believe VF has ruined Vans and Timberland. So they are good stewards of their brands, and their attitude towards Supreme is they're going to be very hands-off, and they want current management to run it just like it is and continue to grow and execute the exact same strategy. But it certainly is a good indication of these sort of real niche brands that have this aura, this kind of high brand value in the market. It also reminds me of Yeezy, Kanye West's brand that expanded from footwear to similar type of streetwear approach. And I remember hearing Kanye West, I believe it was on Joe Rogan's podcast recently, and he must have mentioned that he's worth $5 billion at least 24 times. So it's interesting and certainly indicative of the value of these brands. And, you know, perhaps should have gone into the skate shop business, shouldn't we?
Yeah, we certainly should have. But yeah, I mean, if the it'll be interesting where they're able to find their niche and still stay cool, right? It's kind of a very fine line that they'll need to thread there.
Yeah, one to watch. But as soon as Carlisle got involved, you knew that they were looking to flip it. So this is not too much surprising. But what is surprising is the $2.1 billion price tag and the fact that VF Corp shareholders reacted so favorably to it. But congrats to them. Interesting deal, cool brand, and it's nice to see. So we'll follow how this one develops. But nonetheless, that is about it for us, folks, for episode 98 of the Absolute Return podcast. If you enjoyed it, definitely check out more on absoluterecordpodcast.com and check us out on Twitter. Mike, where can they find you?
My handle is m_Kesslering.
And you can find me on the tweet machine at Julian Klimochko. And until next week, we wish you all the best in your investing. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.